Just a quick word from our sponsor before we jump into today's episode. Optimizing your internal processes can often be a huge unlock for streamlining revenue and getting you and your team, if you have one, out of a manual process. If you're looking to reduce costs and headaches in one fell swoop, consider graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere, and you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days, so proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time, like NetSuite, are kind of a no-brainer. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/SPI. netsuite.com/SPI. Once again, netsuite.com/SPI. And now a quick word from our sponsor before we start the show. Ready to earn sustainable income while creating the work you're passionate about? Get started with Memberful. Whether you teach online courses, host a podcast, run a blog, or write a newsletter, Memberful has all the tools you need to unlock revenue and deeply connect with your audience through subscription membership. Their platform allows you to easily gate content, communicate with your audience, and tier membership access directly on your own website. Plus, with Memberful, there's no need to change your workflow. They work seamlessly and integrate with the tools you already use, including MailChimp, Discord, Zapier, ConvertKit, Google Analytics, and more. Utilize their powerful built-in features and dashboards and watch your business grow. The best part? Memberful gives you full control and ownership of your audience, your brand, and your business. Get started for free at memberful.com/SPI. One more time, that's memberful.com/SPI.
Books tend to be overstuffed. And that's the hardest part, is trying to go from what you know to what your message is. Because I often say books aren't words. And I know that can be confusing. Books are messages that are contained by words. Because people are reading a book not to gain information, because most of us are drowning in information. We're looking for encouragement, inspiration, confidence, and then some actionable things to do. But if we're not certain that this book's for us, we will stop reading.
Without today's guest, a lot of my work would not exist. His name is Azul Taronis. He was actually on the podcast 234 episodes ago in episode 379. That was a long time ago. We were talking about book writing and how a book increases your authority and how to get started with that. But I wanted to bring Azul back on, not just for an update on book writing, because it's still something that we should be doing. We do talk about that, like the opportunity that is in front of us right now with regards to writing books and how it increases our authority, especially as leaders, and what that can do for our businesses and our brands. But more than that, I wanted to get an inside look at Azul's business. He and his partner, Steve, have created an amazing empire that is here to help service leaders and leaders who write books. Authors Who Lead is the name of the brand, as well as the podcast. They're also starting a publishing house and some other incredible things with relation to fiction, in addition to their nonfiction help. Azul, in particular, was my coach through my book writing process with Will It Fly back in 2014, 2015. And he's just got a different way of doing it. You know, and I talk about some of the things that I disliked about the way he coached me, but the things that were absolutely necessary for me to go through and understand, which is exactly what it helps other people through. I mean, there's many, many people who have actually been on the show before that are currently or who have gotten coaching from Azul and are actually, you know, have published books or have books coming out soon. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention those things right now, but anyway, Azul is top notch. We talk about a lot of things today, and we have some special things for you too if you make it all the way to the end. So make sure you stick around. This is episode 613 of the Smart Passive Income Podcast. My name is Pat Flynn, here to help you make more money, save more time, and help more people too. One of the best ways you can help people is to take that knowledge, that experience that you have in your brain, and put it in a book of some sort. But how do we do that? And how is he doing this and creating a business out of this? And how is he taking himself out of that process so he can help more people? All those questions and more are answered today from Azul Taronis from Authors Who Lead. Here he is.
Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, where it's all about working hard now so you can sit back and reap the benefits later. And now your host. He says one of the most influential articles he's ever read was called 1,000 True Fans. Pat Flynn.
Hiring? With Indeed, your search is over. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data. Indeed works fast, like really fast. In fact, by the time this ad's over, 23 hires will have been made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Look, hiring's hard enough, so don't make it harder on yourself. Indeed makes it so easy to manage it all in one place, from initial screenings to messagings, interviewing candidates. You can do it all right from Indeed with no extra apps involved. And listeners of this show get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/smartpassive. Just go to Indeed.com/smartpassive right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/smartpassive. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Our sponsor today is Uplift Desk, creators of office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. If you're like most entrepreneurs, you probably spend a lot of time sitting. Well, a standing desk can make a huge difference. It's actually a complete game changer. If you haven't tried one before, this offer from Uplift is for you. Plus, you can support the show at the same time. Visit UpliftDesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. Over a million customers have chosen Uplift Desk. Innovative product designs, reasonable pricing, same-day shipping, free accessories with every desk. You can see why they're such a big hit. Standing while I work helps me get the creative juices flowing, helps me focus and stay productive, and I'm way more alert when I'm standing. And Uplift is a great deal. An industry-leading 15-year warranty, free shipping, free return shipping if you need to do that. And they provide a state-of-the-art experience. They're stable, made of very solid materials, and there are over 100 desktop choices and customizations available. Go to upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. That's UPLIFT desk.com/SPI to get 5% off your entire order. Azul, welcome back to the Smart Passive Income Podcast. Thanks for joining me today.
Pat, thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be back.
For those of you who might not remember, Azul was a huge part of my life back when I was writing Will It Fly? Because without you, it wouldn't exist, Azul. So again, thank you, because that book continues to still reach loads of people. I still get messages from it. And I had just wanted to thank you once again for publicly thank you for helping with that, because that was a very hard thing to do, was figure out that was the book that was in me. So thank you.
You're welcome. It was a great book and still is, and I recommend it all the time. And it's amazing how that book journey sort of evolved with you as a person, as an entrepreneur as well.
It really did. You know, I think that's what I find special about the way that you help authors, is you almost coach as you're helping people write their books, right? Because I think a lot of people come to you with a book in mind and they already have an idea of what they want it to be about or who it's for. I came to you with an idea, and through some exercises, through a lot of coaching, and I almost hated it at first, just to be honest, because you just kept asking questions. And I'm like, Azul, just tell me what to do. And you kept asking questions like any good coach would. And through that process, I was able to discover, well, oh, here's the true book that I should write, and what it eventually became. What do you think unlocks for people when they work with you when it comes to their original idea, but then what it actually ends up becoming?
Well, I think what happens is a book in your head, when it sits in your mind, is connected to a lots of things. So it's hard to vision the book out of your head onto the page, and to try to write your way through that can be really difficult, meaning books don't know that they're supposed to be birthed by themselves. So all these ideas gets attached to them. Case in point, you wanted to write a book about the Encyclopedia for Everything Online. That's a lot of information. Most authors I meet, they have a lot to share. Their expertise is large and vast. Their experiences are quite a few. And so books tend to be overstuffed. And that's the hardest part, is trying to go from what you know to what your message is. Because I often say books aren't words. And I know that can be confusing. Books are messages that are contained by words. Because people are reading a book not to gain information, because most of us are drowning in information. We're looking for a book to give us encouragement or inspiration or confidence, and then some actionable things to do. But if we're not certain that this book's for us, we will stop reading or we will turn it off. So my work is to help people vision a book first. Like, tell me about this book before you write it. Why is this important to you? What is underneath here, and who will you serve? Why will it help you as the author? Most people want to be selfless, which I understand. It's really about the audience. That's true, but the residual shift that will happen with an author is when they realize the transformation they're trying to make. And for you, the transformation I observed was you were an affiliate marketer for the most part during that time, and you were trying to grow, like selling your own courses, returning to that sort of model. That was the leap you were making as the author. The book had a sort of a lens, but that's the transformation that I help authors see, is like, this isn't just about writing information from your head. This is about growing the message you have inside of you.
And you had mentioned something just now about the purpose of the book in one's life, in one's business. And I know that you hone in on that quite a bit with Authors Who Lead, with you and Steve both sort of at the helm there. What are the kinds of coaching questions you ask a person who comes to you when they want to write a book with regards to, well, how does it fit into everything else? How do you guide a person to understand the purpose of the book that they're about to dive into?
Well, one of the things I want to know, or for them to see, not so much for me, but for them, is most books sit under the surface of what we know. Just under the surface, meaning our conscious mind knows a lot of stuff and we use that regularly. What I'm looking for is what's just under that, under the subconscious. What is operating you? What is keeping you moving forward? What's your source of inspiration or your motivation? Because even if you change, let's say, directions in your career path or in your business, your book should still represent you well. Your book should be based deeper on values and who you are than what you know, because what you know will change. But your values tend to be pretty clear and pretty sustainable over time. So that's one of the things that Will It Fly really did well, was once you got clear that this was about having time with my family, this is about helping other people find time with their family, this is about growing a business and not wasting your time, it became a value-based book about what you really believe, not stuff that you know. And I think that's the difference. I'm really trying to help people say, you don't want to be known as the Kickstarter queen, and then 4 years from now, you're no longer doing that and think, oh my God, that book's stuffed with information. If it's stuffed with who you are, what you believe, what you value, that book won't ever grow weary. It will only amplify the next thing you do.
And then how do you discover what that is, what your values actually are that you can put into the book? I know that when I have coaching students, for example, we talk about values and what they believe in or what they fight for, what they stand up for. Sometimes it's very challenging for them to put it into words, let alone put it in a book or signify that within a book. How do you help a person figure out exactly what it is that they are doing this for?
Well, sometimes I do this exercise that Steve designed, which is I ask them to do a lifeline. And if you think of a lifeline like maybe a timeline you did in middle school, where you're like, the Civil War started here and went to here. It's that little straight line with the little notches. You remember those? And every hash mark represents some major event. Well, we have authors do a lifeline to show us. So tell us about your early life, like where you started, like where you remember you becoming you. And then I want you to come to the present moment now. And all I want you to do is show me on this timeline, what are your highs and lows in your life? Meaning, things that you would feel proud of, excited about, want to share, those go above the line. Things that you feel like are hard or difficult or things you would just consider below the line, make a distinction. And the reason I do that is I want people to see clearly they've been who they are for quite some time. They just have to see the patterns of what matters to them. It didn't just show up now because they're a leader, an entrepreneur. It's been there for a while. Not just values, but how they've lived in the world. And what I've noticed is people might put, you know, I was born here, grandpa died, my baby brother was born, and it goes up and down. But what people miss is that they're made up of the things in between those highs and lows. The in between is where most people are made. But we don't notice those things because we were working so hard to get them. And so our head was to the grindstone, for example. Or we were falling so hard, so low, that we didn't notice who we were during that moment. I'm asking them to stop and reflect on who they are over time. And share it with me in a very quick period of time so they can see who they are. And then go, wow, I just didn't realize how much that mattered to me. But it's true. It's happened here, 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 here. And this is my response to those kind of things. That's how you start to uncover your values, because they've been there all along. You just need to slowly uncover them. And nobody really asks us to do a timeline of our own life and reflect who we are. So that's one of the first things we do, is help them see that clearly.
And you did that for me as well, I remember. And then I have taken that, and I put a lot of those principles into Will It Fly, in fact, because when you're building a business, you want to really know who you are and what makes you unique and what are your unique advantages, etc. So for those of you who did or have read Will It Fly, you might remember
the history test and the Shark Tank test and some other things that are in there, where in the very beginning of the book, before you even form your business idea or even understand what it is that you're going to be creating, it's who are you? And when you're an author, you need to know that about yourself too. And this is what I love about the process that you and Steve bring leaders into who are creating books for their business. And again, I had asked the question, like, how does one discover what their purpose is for their book? And it wasn't, oh, well, how much more money do you want to make? Or how many more course sales do you want? It's, well, who are you? And what can you bring to this? Because when you fully put yourself into a book like this and you understand who you're writing for as well, well, then all those other things will come. More money will come, more opportunities on stage, more sales of your courses or coaching programs, what have you. So authors who lead is where you want to go if you want to write a book. Now, I know a lot of what's going on in your business, obviously, because you and Steve are both students of mine and we connect every single week. And it's just been amazing to see and continue to see your growth because you were in the SPI Accelerator and this was back before you had a team and now you have a team and all this stuff. I want to talk about the transition from Coach Azul, which was the brand before, to now Authors Who Lead. What brought on that name change? And deeper than that, like, what was the change of who it is that you were serving? And tell me about that transition. And was that easy or was that difficult?
Thank you for asking that. It was really brought up when we were feeling a lot of resistance when we were in the SPI Accelerator, when I realized it was really hard for a brand that was branded personally under Coach Azul to invite anybody else into it, because people, even if I tried, didn't want anything but Azul, because I built the brand around that. And though the reputation I built, I felt very confident in, what I didn't know what I was doing is how I can scale this or grow this or add people to this if my name is in there. So Steve and I, who was helping me in the business already, was invisible and really had no place to show up. So the encouragement from you and the other leaders in that group were to find something that could be an anchor or the centerpiece that other things can grow from. And so we really thought, well, who are we serving? Like, we're not serving everybody. And that was the thing we focused on, the thing you always reminded us, stay in a place that we serve the audience we want to. We knew we served leaders and people who wanted to lead, whether they were entrepreneurs or someone just starting, but they knew in their mind they wanted to make an impact with their message. So that's where Authors Who Lead, where it came from. And it allowed us to expand more around the concept around why authors can be leaders and what to do even after. Because sometimes you write a book and that sort of excitement can fade. You have to stay with it. You have to stay the messenger. That is really the pivot. And what it's allowed us to do is add people to the team. So I no longer just coach the groups by myself. I have coaches that help me, that know our system, that I've helped coach them, and that they've written, you know, some of them have written 19 books. One of our coaches, Heather, she's prolific. And so I'm constantly catching up to her, but she's, you know, one of the members of the team. And I would never be able to add her to that if I left it into that sort of, you know, self-personal brand.
Was that a tough transition? Because I know whenever a brand change happens like that, there's a ton of moving pieces and a ton of parts that have to be updated and all that kind of stuff. How much work was that, in fact?
I had spent so much time and effort on the website and photography and all that. It was hard to let go of that because it's like, oh, I committed so much to that.
The Coach Azul one?
Coach Azul. It's just, you know how you get your website finally working? Because for the first several years that I started coaching you and a lot of other people, I didn't have a website. I was like, just text me. You know, I didn't have anything. The good news is the reputation was part of it. But once I built that, I didn't want it to go through it again. So the hard part was putting up a really messy, rough draft website and not worrying about that it doesn't look as beautiful as that site. Not knowing exactly who I was yet with Steve as the and together, because we were building things together all along. But what's our message together? So having to write new copy. But what it did for us was allow us to start to speak to our ideal audience and no longer just speak to everybody about writing books. And that helps, but it was difficult because now I had to really rethink, well, who are we? Who is Authors Who Lead without Azul? Because it needs to have its own like identity and it's too wrapped up in me. And that really was difficult because people had to ask me lots of questions. Well, what do you do? How do you do it? And I was like, shoot, I don't know. I don't watch myself. I have to really think about this. And that took a while. So that was...
I just do it.
I just do it. It was a little painful. But as we got through it, creating the brand manual for the new couple of brands that fall under Authors Who Lead, it really began to fall in place. And I felt a lot of relief actually, because now it wasn't just me leading this thing and other people could answer questions and really help the business start to scale. That was the thing, is it was just a coach is sort of freelancing thing, and I couldn't scale the thing because it was just me in it.
Who was your first coach that taught your process other than you?
The first coach that I had work for me? Actually, it was Steve was the first one.
Yeah. Oh, Steve. Okay. I mean, Steve's your partner and you guys are very close, so you kind of knew each other already anyway. So other than Steve, like, I'm curious because I'm putting myself in the shoes of a listener who's like, wow, that sounds amazing. I can have somebody else come in and coach on my behalf, but that also sounds scary. How will they know my process? Do you give them a manual or like work with them over their shoulder for a certain period of time? Like, what's the process of hiring a coach to teach your thing? Tell me about that.
I remember you telling me a lot of the people that they can come to your team can come from your audience, can be fans of yours. And they tend to pay attention to everything. They tend to consume all your content. And Heather, our first coach, she had written, I think, 14 books by the time I met her. And they were all young adult sci-fi books with a female protagonist. Very interesting. But she was trying to write a nonfiction book and she was just stuck. She's like, normally I could just write these in 30 days. What's going on? I don't understand. I started to coach her through a process, and that's when she started to see, this isn't what I was taught about writing. I'm like, I know, I'm trying to unlearn you so that we can unclog the block that you're having, and you're trying to solve this problem of structure, and I want to solve it differently. I think structure can get in the way of creativity. So structure in this case was causing a problem. So basically I coached her through her first and second nonfiction book, and she was just hanging on every word, listen to every podcast, would show up to anything I offer for free, and joined one of our membership programs. And the more I watched her and listened to her in the mastermind that we ran, her questions were so amazing. I think she gets the true essence of what I think coaching is. It was her demeanor, not her skill, because she had never been a coach before and she didn't know. I just asked her, would you be willing to? And so what we did is I said, I'm going to coach the first cohort with you. You watch, you observe, you be a part of it. Because at first I didn't know I could coach a group because I was only coaching one-on-one. So I was terrified I couldn't coach more than one person at a time. So first, that was my first hurdle. Can I do this in a multiple person group? The second hurdle was, can I get somebody else to do it? And so what we did was I created content that people could observe and watch. So I remained the teacher because I didn't want her to have to try to teach the system. I felt like that was a big burden. So I created the content and then she coached the group through the activities every week. She said, okay, you guys watched the video, you did the thing, let's share about what happened, let's talk about it. So she coached them through the process that I provided. So I still remained the teacher and not the facilitator. Sort of like a professor teaches the stuff and the TA sort of does the work with them. That's sort of how I wanted to set it up because I didn't want to burden her. It's a lot to kind of think through all those steps. But that forced me to have to record everything and no longer just show up on the fly. I really had to think through things. And so that's really how the process started. Once I did it once with her, I'd only show up once in a while. And then I showed up only when she invited me. And now she schedules me. Like, you're going to come on this week, not this week. You're going to come do this, but not that. So I just follow her. I say, you tell me I'm here for you. And she guides me now on those calls, which is really great.
That's so cool.
Which I thought was impossible, Pat.
That's amazing. Tell me about that. Why did you think that was impossible?
Well, because, you know, you start to believe in your own magic, I think. To be honest, you think, it's me. It's not. If it's just attached to you, your business will, you'll burn out. And two, then you really don't have something clear. I wasn't clear. So I had to first study what I was doing and be clear. And I think it felt impossible because it was hard. And I was so effortless to just show up. But now that I had to study and kind of categorize things, how do I make this magic happen when I'm not there? What is the tool that works? And that's where we started moving away from me coaching and using tools that teach. So that's where like the timeline exercise came in and those things. Sort of people got really clear about who they are when someone else unfolded their life right in front of them.
That's so great. Thank you for helping me think through that for everybody. So now that you have coaches sort of in your place teaching your stuff, what has that enabled you to do, that extra time? What have you done with that time? I know there's a lot of different projects in the works now, including a publishing house, which I invite you to talk about as well. But that, amongst what other things have now come about?
Well, what it allowed me to focus on what I would say were more premium clients, not to say some are better than others, but they have a need that's really niche. Like they have a big publishing contract and they feel the pressure to deliver, or they're a content creator in another place like YouTube or someplace, because just because you're a content creator in one place doesn't mean you can write a book or you feel confident about writing a book. So I get to serve those people more because my schedule is more open. The other thing it allowed me to do is focus on being a writer again. To be honest, I was so exhausted from coaching Zoom calls all day long. And then at the end of the day, I was like, I don't think I have it in me. I'm just exhausted. So it's allowed me to start writing again and dreaming about why I started this, which was I want to share the things I know, but also to be a writer. So one of the things that I've been able to do is start a new program for really for leaders who want to write a book of fiction. And it's called Fiction with Purpose. And meaning they don't intend to write fiction to make a living at it, but they really think maybe I'd write this book for some other reason, like just because I want to try it, or I want to write a book for my kids to read. Or like Steve and I, we interviewed our father during the pandemic over Zoom. It's funny to watch them use Zoom, but we recorded interviews about his early life, and we're turning all those interviews into a 3-part series of fiction that captures his life growing up in a red light district in the hills of Appalachia, right outside of a small coal mining town, and what it was like to a place that existed in the 1800s until the early 50s or 60s as like the Vegas of that time. So we're immortalizing his life, but not trying to just capture a biography. We really thought we could tell it differently. And so Fiction with Purpose is one of the things I've been able to start because I have just a little more time. It's a playground. It's not like I'm not saying this will scale, unless maybe it does, but I'm not as worried because I have time to do that. So those are some of the things that I've been able to do with more time. And the last one, probably more recently, is starting a membership where people can come in and not just learn to write books, but how do I market this book? How do I get on stages? How do I get a TEDx talk? Like all the things that come with being a leader who's an author. Those pieces now I can teach not just in the coursework of writing a book, but from A to Z. And so having more time has definitely helped me to be able to be more creative.
So good. So good. And you've mentioned a bunch of things that I wanted to talk about. First of all, the fiction sort of play is really neat. I know that you have been writing a lot. So yes, you've had a lot of extra time and you're writing these fiction books. And now you've developed this sort of process similar to what you did with like the nonfiction stuff that you are now experimenting with. And I think you have your first group coming up, or you've already got a student or two that are working through like a fiction novel with you. Tell me about like, what does that actually look like in terms of helping people with that?
Yeah. So Fiction with Purpose is really meant to be an organic way of writing. So the cohort just started. We're on week 3, and it's a 90-day program with the idea that you go from your idea, even if you didn't have one, to done with a draft of a manuscript in 90 days, which is ambitious. But what I find is if people don't finish quickly for fiction, they tend to get a new idea and they just start another book and they don't ever finish. The way that it's structured is so many people were taught writing kind of early on, like when you're young, but very few of us ever wrote fiction for fun in school. Maybe you had creative writing for a semester, maybe, but most of us don't think that in that world. So we really don't know if we have the confidence. But what I found is that because story is so ingrained in humans, that they know more than they think. And they just have to stop trying to over process things. Because writing a book, especially a fiction, is a lot like life. You show up and things happen. Even if you have a perfect plan, if you've ever tried to plan the perfect family vacation with what happens on day 1, 5, 6, 7, what time everyone gets up, where you go, you realize that it rarely goes as planned. And yet the things that happen, you always know what to do. The bus breaks down, or the ride is closed, or the volcano exploded, whatever it is. You just respond to it. Well, that's what writing is. It's like life on the page. You shouldn't overthink it. If a character has problems, he'll solve it. And problems are actually what you need. So you don't walk away from problems in a book. You walk towards them. You need multiple ways in which to fix the story with more complications. So my job is to not let them worry if they're never done it before, but trust these instincts. And you know where I learned that, Pat, which is really interesting, is I used to coach teachers when I was a principal and a teacher. And I would go into young classrooms like kindergarten or first grade where kids don't have a lot of writing skills yet. They might have had in preschool, they can put a few words together. But I was trying to teach writing, early age writing. And so the teachers, I would say, okay, class, we'll get those big jumbo pencils and that paper with that buff paper with those blue lines and the spot on the top for a drawing. And I tell them, we're gonna write stories today. And they would cheer. They get so excited. And the teacher would say, oh, you know what? They don't really know how to write yet. I said, that's not a problem. She goes, she would look at me strange. And I tell the kids we're going to write. And they never worried. They didn't think it was a problem. I'd say, put crayons and pencils. And I'd say, when I say go, we're going to start. And when I say stop, we're going to end. Is that okay? And I'll give you a little bit of a warning so you know when it's coming. Okay. And you mark, get set, go. And kids would grab pencils and markers and they would start creating stories. Some of them really knew words and they were putting one word after the other. Very few. Some were scribbling so it looked like words because they had seen adults scribble. And others were drawing pictures. And all of it looked sort of like not much. But when I would stop kids and I would say, okay, put your pencil down. Johnny, show me your work. And it looked like scribbles. And I'd say, Johnny, can you read me your story or tell me what your story is? And Johnny would say, this is a story about an aunt who gets lost coming home from school. I said, oh, really? He said, yes. Well, then what happens? He said, well, his mom goes looking for him and she is an elephant. I said, she's an elephant. Yeah. Well, what happens? Well, she goes looking for him in a tree and she gets stuck. Johnny goes on to tell this beautifully elaborate story with a beginning, middle, and end and with a resolution. The scribbles on the page, and I was like, that's a beautiful story. And I realized in that moment, everyone has story built in them. For hundreds and hundreds of millennia, we have been passing down our life through story. It's part of our DNA. So what I'm trying to do with this program is teach people that deep thing that's already in them, just like those kids. They have story built in them, and I just have to nurture it out of them, get out of their own way. So that's a lot of the differences in how I teach fiction versus follow the structure.
Dude, that's so good. It's making me think of how important story is for things like podcasting and YouTube and other content. I mean, not necessarily just fiction, but nonfiction and the art of storytelling and the 3-act structure and those sorts of things. But you're right. I think when we try to fit things into structure so much, we lose a lot of that creativity. And I love that you're offering that space to be creative and to flow and to get into flow state. Speaking of space, I know that for a lot of your authors, you are focusing on future in-person events and things like that, retreats. Why do you think it's important for when writing, especially, to get out of where you normally are, right? Because I think for me, you know, I'm comfortable writing here at home. But when I had to write Will It Fly, I had to get out of my comfort space for some reason, and it just seems counterintuitive. What's the purpose of an escape, if you will, to be able to fully write?
I think it's just changing the routine of what feels like work. A lot of people associate the computer with so many things. Sometimes it's deadlines or it's schedules or pressure. Sometimes just being at your desk where those things occur is enough of a trigger that you're not noticing that's causing you to stare at the blank page. Sometimes it's the environment. Sometimes that space could be critically important for you to show up to. Like you said, sometimes Will Fly, you had to leave. Other writing, being at your office actually feels great because you can leave and close the door and it's over. I think it just depends on, is there resistance there? Are you finding, like, I keep getting stuck when I sit at my screen. And even if you're really good at being creative in some other endeavor and that desk, you might need to shake it up to reprogram your brain to say, this is writing. For me, I had tried. I tell people it took me 24 years and 30 days to write my first book. The 24 years was the struggle to think about it, to doubt, to start, to stop, to throw it away. And then eventually when I figured out the plan, it took me 30 days to write that book, Art of Apprenticeship, that I took to you on that one day business breakthrough. But I had to write it by hand because every time I sat at the computer, I froze, no matter what. So I wrote it by longhand. And then I went and typed it. I write and type, like, but that was the only way I could keep from the resistance for me. So I think it depends on each person. And I made it an event. So I would sneak into hotels that had really nice pools or really nice places. And I would pretend like I would be a guest writing. I created intrigue and it made the event was more interesting. So writing was more fun.
Oh, wow.
So I did different things that helped break the cycle that was keeping me stuck.
Can you do that? Can you just go to a hotel and like hang out by the pool? I mean, I guess.
If you order a drink, they think you belong. That's what I've learned.
Huh. Life hack. Nice. As we finish up here, this has been great. Just A, to catch up with you, Zul, and see how the brand is going and all the great things that you and Steve are doing now to help authors. And, you know, I know that when people come to you to write, you know, they're not all the same. They are in different stages of business, different stages of life. How do you, on your website or in your brand, help determine like who shows up and how to best serve them? Do you have any tips for those of us who also have sort of like sub niches within our space? Like, what are you using specifically?
Well, first of all, one of the things I did, Charlie Hohen was one of my early coaches as well and a great friend. He made me make a list of all the people that I really want to work with, what are they like? What are their demeanor, their personality, their behaviors, their influences? Like, who are they? And then who are the people you don't want to work with? And I at first was like being scrappy. I was like, I want to work with anyone who will pay me. But what I realized is that started to make me unhappy, because even though they were giving me money, I started to get stuck with, like, I don't know how to help them. And what I realized is it wasn't even, I don't know how, it's just, I don't think they wanted to learn from me because they were resisting what I was offering. And so I made a list of the qualities of people who I don't want to work with. Even if they were really closely aligned with the person who I wanted to, they were very similar. So it took me a little bit of time. And a lot of that helped me refine how do I attract the right people. So I tend to be someone that attracts people who are high performers, who have a big message and a big, in their mind, responsibility to an audience, but they also feel like they don't know what they're doing. And that's a really vulnerable place to be in. It's not information. They're usually out looking for confidence. And, you know, that's a lot of what I provide, and I'm really good at that. So that's where I try to attract the people. I don't try to focus on people who think they got it all figured out, because I know I won't help them. They will resist my silly exercises I give them when I'm trying to disrupt their brain. Even when they do come work with me and they do it their way, eventually they'll say, okay, you're right. Tell me what to do, because I couldn't do it. I thought I could do it. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. So I think that's how I've kind of honed in on who I help. High performing people with a bigger message than they're thinking, growing their brand or their business, and they want to make sure it's good and it's right. And that's really what I help them get confidence in when they're working on their books.
How about even within that space, you know, you have, and I know you have a quiz, for example, on your website, and that's been providing some really useful information for you. Tell me a little bit about how that quiz works. We've talked about quizzes a lot here on the show. However, we haven't really uncovered a case study on how a person's using them. I'd love for you to just explore and share with me, you know, in more detail how that quiz works. A person sees it, and then what's the process? What are the branches, if you will?
Yeah. Well, what I've realized is people quickly, and it was me too, leap really quickly to their publishing path before they even start writing their book. They start thinking about, do I self-publish? Do I find an agent, traditional published, or somewhere in between? They start thinking about marketing. They get their head to the end in mind, which is, that's normal, especially for entrepreneurs. So what we try to do is help, based on that sort of idea, for them to find out what's their book's publishing path. Usually helps them to kind of realize that depending on where they're coming from, they might think differently about their publishing path. So the quiz helps them ask some very simple questions. Some of them have to do with writing, some of them don't. For example, if they select, part of you said, what's the sort of the branches? If they select they'd like to be quiet and sit by themselves and at a party and they don't want to interact, they'd rather people come talk to them, then we probably know that they're probably struggling with being forward, creating content, or, you know, they probably don't have a social presence in a big way. And that might be true. But what we're trying to do is figure out where do they best should focus on? Should they focus on the content, or are they really thinking about, hey, I need to get this book out of the park and I'm growing my brand? So we ask questions that help clarify what's the point of writing their book and what are they hoping it does for them without being too direct, because we don't want them to be, you know, kind of trick the questions to get some answer. We want to really know. So it spits them out in three categories. Either they're a rising star, which means they're maybe be new on their journey of leadership or entrepreneurship. A trailblazer who's already got an audience, a following. They have some notoriety, but they're not quite at the level they're hoping to go to. And then there's movement makers, people who already have a big audience, people who already are making an impact. Those three things help them know what kind of publishing path they should consider. And that helps them get more confident. Like, oh, okay, so it's okay to do a self-published book when I'm first starting out. And that's because this is how I'm going to grow my brand. Versus, you know, should I be doing a self-published book if I'm a movement maker? Maybe, but think about these things. So that's what its job is, to help break it down so they understand the challenges and pitfalls with each of them and the benefits as well. So the quiz is totally different than writing, which is why it's kind of different, because we found so many people ask us right away about publishing and marketing and before they even start. So that's where we started.
And how do those answers help you? Do you do anything with the different buckets of people who come in?
What we hope to do is drive them to some action. So at the end of the quiz, what we're hoping for them to do is, based on their quiz results, this is the path we think is best for you. And then we tell them, and then we say, we'd love to offer you to apply to our group coaching program. And we give them an opportunity to apply. So that's the goal, is application. It's not to sell them anything, usually.
The goal would be to get them into the group, no matter which of the three they are, right? They're all kind of going to the same place.
Potentially. If they select Movement Maker, sometimes they will. We might, rather than the application, might let us know, hey, this is probably a call for you, Asul. They have a huge following. They have a publisher, or they have an agent, or this is their goal. That might be a good fit for a one-on-one client. If they're a trailblazer, they actually might benefit with like-minded people being in a group, in a small group of 6 to 8, because it's like a mastermind for 6 months just about writing a book. So trailblazers do really well there, as well as rising stars. Sometimes they do well by joining a group where they feel a little out of place. And sometimes they need to be with their own group, and maybe they need to try maybe the membership and just dabble for a while until they have enough money or confidence that this is really what they should be doing. So it just helps us sort them a little bit. And then we know exactly if they apply, how they scored. It doesn't exclude them from anything, but it helps us direct how do we help them best. So it's really a sorting tool and gives them the reasons why we're doing that.
So they're not necessarily segments to sell different things to, but more just to understand more about, well, who they are and where they're coming from. And even if they all end up in the same spot, you can speak to them differently, right? They're in a different position. They require a different language or a different number of touch points, for example, before the ask can come in. And I think that's fascinating because I know a lot of people who are implementing quizzes, but they have like 5 different pathways, and each of those different pathways are 5 different courses, right? They could all be the same course if all courses can help them, but those pathways help determine how to get from where they are to that same course. And it's different for every sort of group. So I love that. Any final words of advice for those who are curious about book writing today? You know, we've talked about books quite a bit here on the show. You've come on, Jeff Goins has come on, and a few others to talk about writing books. Tell me about your thoughts on the 2022, 2023 sort of book landscape. Is it still something that is worth diving into? And if so, who would that be for and who would it not be for?
Yeah. Oh, it's a perfect time to write a book. I mean, I think the creator economy is just booming. For all of those of us who've been in entrepreneurship for a while, it might feel like it's kind of old. It is only growing. People are searching for content creators in multiple ways to build shows, to build programs. So they're looking for you. They just need to know you exist. And if you don't have any audience, becoming an author gives you instant authority, like overnight. I've had people who were doctors, attorneys, lawyers come work with me, and their book launched them in the stratosphere above their peers, because everybody and their peers are all MDs. They're all doctors or all PhDs. So they don't stand out. A doctor with a book on a topic that's unique, that makes you stand out. So it's really great. And if you, like me, I didn't have anything experiential wise in entrepreneurial world. That's why I was following you. But the book allowed me to get a TED Talk. It got me an introduction to a organizer who met with me for 45 minutes and invited me. I never applied. They invited me based on the fact that I was an author. So I went from being nobody, knowing nothing, to having that TED Talk out there in the world and allowed me to speak on a topic that I cared about, but that was leveraging authority. So whether you're a seasoned author, sometimes going from traditional to self-publishing can be really beneficial. And sometimes you could move from self-publishing to having a traditional deal. I think it just depends on your goals. And I think anyone who's considering wanting their message to make a movement, they should really think about it. And that's what we do at Mandala Tree Press, which is our press we started, is help people make a movement with their message. And that's the focus of our group, of our organization, is to help people get the message they want out of their hearts and into the world.
I love it. Asul, thank you so much for being here today. And thank you to Steve, who's not with us today, but he is doing some busy stuff as well. And for what you're doing at Authors Who Lead, give us the rundown on where people should go from here. I know we mentioned a lot of things from the quiz to even your TED Talk. I mean, do you have a resource page perhaps with a lot of this stuff so that a person can go and conveniently see all those things?
Yeah. If they go to authorswholead.com/SPI, we'll have a resource page there for them. It has the quiz. It has some of the episodes that might help them first to listen to. And they can learn a little bit more about like where they need to start. Because a lot of times you just need a little more information. And there's a lot out there. And we want to just condense it into a really simple next step for them. And we'd be happy to direct them towards what might help them in their path. Even if that means, hey, should I do a TED Talk first or should I do a book first? Or how do I turn that talk into a book? Those kinds of resources are there on that page.
Your TED Talk has how many views now?
I think 3.1 million.
3.1 million, that's insane. I love that. And that came, again, as a result of authoring a book and getting invited on that stage. And you should all check that out. And I think you'll have the TEDx talk on there as well, right, on that page?
Yes.
authorswholead.com/SPI?
Correct, yeah. And that TED talk is what makes a good teacher great. And they'll be there too, so they can see how that unfolded.
Cool. Azul, thank you so much for coming on today. Appreciate you and look forward to connecting again soon. And of course, we'll talk on the next coaching call.
Yeah, thank you so much, Pat. I really appreciate it.
Such an absolute fun episode. Azul is one of my favorite people in the world. So genuine, so kind, and again, tremendously helpful for my career and doing the same thing for others too. And I'm just so happy to see he and his partner Steve creating just an incredible company to help people like you, perhaps, get the book out there. That's not just going to help you make more money. I mean, that's not even really the purpose. It's to lead and to get that message out there. And now even potentially get a story out there through fiction, which again, I think is really neat and definitely something I want to take part of in the future. You've probably heard me talk about that before. And the process that he's taking authors through already with regards to fiction without structure, which is kind of the opposite of what we think, right? And again, it's process. And when you develop your own style and your process, right, that's when you can coach and stand out from other coaches who are offering the same sort of transformation. And you can have a better experience through that as well. And that's how you stand out. That's how you create your unique selling proposition. I think Azul has done an incredible job. And I'm just remembering the days when I first met Azul, when Chris Ducker and I at our one-day business breakthrough event. It was a one-day workshop where Azul was one of 25 students who paid to come and see me and Chris, put them in the hot seat, break down their business, and build it back up. And to have Azul tell us all that he wrote a book in like 30 or 60 days leading up to the event, just to have something to show for The Art of Apprenticeship, and a fine book at that. I knew there was something special in this guy, and he's definitely continued to help spread that word out and help people. So definitely check him out, authorswholead.com/SPI. That'll take you to a page with more information specifically that is there for you, the SPI listener. If you want to get involved, they got a lot of ways that you can get involved, if anything, even just motivation, because he's definitely somebody who can help you through things. So thank you to Azul. Steve, I know you weren't on, this is Azul's partner. He wasn't here on the show with us, but they're in spirit for sure. And you can check them both out at, again, Authors Who Lead. Check out the podcast and authorswholead.com/SPI. If you want to get the show notes and all the links that I mentioned just in one spot, smartpassiveincome.com/session613 will take you there. And speaking of taking you there, I'm here to continue to take you to the next level of your business. Make sure you hit subscribe so you don't miss out. We have a Friday follow-up episode coming, as well as more incredible interviews coming your way so that we can unpack a lot of the knowledge and experience that people have had their whole life and bring it to you in a 30 to 60 minute episode. I mean, it varies, right? So anyway, thank you so, so much. Hit that subscribe button and I'll see you in the next one. Cheers. Thanks for listening to the Smart Passive Income Podcast at smartpassiveincome.com. I'm your host, Pat Flynn. Our senior producer is Sarah Jane Hess. Our series producer is David Grabowski. And our executive producer is Matt Garland. Sound editing by Duncan Brown. The Smart Passive Income Podcast is a production of SPI Media. We'll catch you in the next session. Starting a business can feel daunting and confusing, but it doesn't have to be. That's why Terry Rice started the Launch Your Business podcast, another awesome show from the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Each week, Terry shares strategic actions, specific tools, and what he refers to as high-performance mindsets that allow you to thrive under pressure. Recent guests include rapper T.I., Amy Porterfield, and yours truly. And Terry frequently publishes value pack solo shows too, like this one titled How to Write Proposals That Get Accepted and Don't Take Forever to Write. Great stuff. So make sure you listen in to Launch Your Business right now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher.